You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Point Tavern on Riverside Drive for another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Who's seen The Naked Gun?
Me.
Right, everybody's seen The Naked Gun, right? Remember the scene, the beginning of the baseball scene where you had all the announcers? There was like eight guys doing the game. Remember that?
Yeah.
That's what we have here tonight.
Huh? Yeah.
We have Patrick Murphy. We have Alex Stanek. We have Mike Krosky. We have Bart Logan. We have Ori Benatar. That is the most awesome name I've ever heard. Did you make that name up, or is that your name?
It is my name, yes.
Really? Do you think he's ever gotten these questions before?
No, this is the first time, right, Ori?
All right, I'm sorry.
Definitely the first time.
We just met. I mean, what's your favorite Pat Benatar song?
Favorite Pat Benatar song? I'll be lame and say Hit Me With Your Best Shot.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
That used to be a song they played at crew games.
Yeah.
At least you didn't say, like, We Belong, which is a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
All right, welcome, Ori. We're glad to have you here. Crew 1, NYCFC nil on a sunny, crisp day, but I was pleased with the weather. You know, when your opponent goes a man down, especially when you're at home so early in a match, your first instinct is to pump your fist in the air and, you know, wave goodbye to the offending player. And then you sit down and you start to think about it and you go, eh, be careful what you wish for. And in this case, I think that's, at least in my mind, that's absolutely true. It ruined the game. They did what they had to do. They bunkered in and tried to get out with a point, and they almost accomplished that feat, and they almost tied the game at the end. They did what they needed to do. I didn't think we did a particularly good job of reacting to having to throw our game plan out the window. We got the win, though, so maybe I'm just complaining too much. How'd you guys see it? It was kind of a dull match for the most part, right?
Yes, it was definitely a dull match. I think anytime you go up a man like that, as you said, Brian, you expect a team to come out, especially a team that you expect to, you know, compete for silverware this year, potentially, to go out and take advantage of having that man advantage for so long. And while the crew did, I mean, they controlled the game, had significant advantage in possession, 62.3%, 14 shots to 7, 6-3 in shots on target. So, you know, controlling the game. But you want to see the team put the ball in the back of the net. And that's something we saw all preseason. And we didn't see the clinicalness of the attackers in this game. A lot of chances. Pedro Santos had three in the first half, I think. Two kind of rocket shots and one close-range header. They were all good opportunities. He would have liked to do a little bit better with them. Yunus Mokhtar had one that went right at Sean Johnson. There was the Diaz miss in the second half, which was probably the biggest miss of them all. But, you know, that's a guy just coming, had been out for a little bit. Caleb said today he'd missed six straight practices leading in the game, which is part of the reason he didn't start. But I did like what he gave, you know, to a tired back line, as we talked about a few weeks ago. I think you can look at this game two ways. You know, one, you got to win. And that's the most important thing. You started off better than last year. You control the game against a team that, you know, only lost six times last year, scored 63 goals. You got your first shutout of the year. Last year, Eloy Room only had one shutout in 12 games. So, you know, these are all positives. I thought the back line looked pretty good together. The negatives are you didn't score more goals, and I think that's pretty apparent. But when New York City goes down a man, you know, they go into essentially a five-man back line. Sometimes they had six guys, back in in the box.
It was a park the bus mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely. You know, they weren't going to try and win the game unless they got a break the other way. And they did get a couple chances, no doubt about that.
Were also trying to wind their way out of the game. They were pissing and moaning like Toronto. And maybe having a man sent off puts you in a bad mood, but I felt like they were, you know, spending way too much of their time.
Well, I mean, that's something they've done for a while now. And also, I mean, it really did remind me of when Guatemala plays the U.S. in a qualifier. You know, have like nine guys behind the ball and just hope you get some counter of some sort. Yeah. But, you know, in the end, it's all about getting 3 points. I don't care how. If it's ugly or if it's pretty, it's still the same 3 points. And especially when you compare it to what we dealt with most of last year, I don't know how, and no offense, Brian, and I'm sure Stanek's going to have some nice things to say.
That's right.
I don't know how people can really complain, especially on a first game against a top-notch team. And, again, comparing it against last year when we were giving up goals left and right at mm-hmm. the end, I'll take this all day, every day.
Perspective. That is appreciated, Mike. And I will say that the goal was it only took a few seconds. But he, in basketball vernacular, he made his own shot. And you saw with that goal, with, you know, beating three guys basically and finding just that little open window in the back of the net, you saw, Ori, didn't you, what they saw in pushing all that money to the middle of the table to get this guy. Totally. I wanted him to shoot more.
Mm-hmm. There were, the thing that I liked about Lucas Zilarayan a lot in this game that I saw, he's hungry for the ball. A lot mm-hmm. of times you have that central attacking midfielder who's just expecting the passes from the midfield or the back line to get those possessions, create those chances. There were a lot of times he was running back, wanted the ball, was hungry to get it, create those chances. And that goal was a great team effort because in that first half, there were a lot of instances where the Crew would slow down play, allow New York City to get organized defensively. And against 10 men, especially for 87 minutes, for a team who just played on Wednesday, who I think 10 of the 11 starters had started that game on Wednesday in the Champions League, you want to tire them out.
Yeah,
they got to run and run and run. And a lot of people don't realize sometimes 11v10 in soccer, there's a lot more space on the field. It's tough to see that on TV. It's tough to see that sometimes, but there's always going to be more space. So in the first half, a little too slow in terms of offense. There weren't very creative chances. I think Caleb Porter must have said something to them because in the second half, I thought it looked a lot better. And you look at that goal from hockey assist Darlington Nagby. That was a beautiful ball he sent mm-hmm. to the other side to Afful. Mm-hmm. And in that first half, we saw Afful and Valenzuela cut outside most of the time. Instead, Afful saw the space inside, made that decision that created the space to get it to Zilarayan. And, you know, three parts of that goal, strength, balance, and having the turn to create that shot. And I thought it was a picture-perfect finish from Zilarayan and proves that he could be the man for this team this season.
Well, they do have to look for him, which they did on that goal. And he showed, just get me the ball in a dangerous spot, and I'm going to put it in the back of the net. And we don't always get that from some of our other guys. You could see that this guy is more of a world-class type scorer. And that's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's a good place to start from. I also found myself spending a lot of time watching Vito, and I really am impressed because as big and intimidating as he is, he's really good on the ball, very confident on the ball. I don't think I saw a bum touch from him at all. And, you know, a lot of times big guys in this league, you know, that's where they're lacking.
Right.
And I didn't see any of that.
And don't forget, he was playing, you know, with an early yellow, too, that he received. And he's playing off
of
the yellow.
That was a hard tackle, too.
It was a hard tackle, but I think there's an argument that it was clean.
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a makeup call, for lack of better. Not that the red wasn't warranted by the letter of the law. And I think maybe by the letter of the law, and the referee felt they needed to call it, maybe because that changes the balance of the game so early off the top. But regardless, I think Vito, you know, the strength, it didn't look like a pretty small, you know, sample size of him playing without the card, but it didn't really look like it impacted his game that much. And there is an energy about him, and it really looked like the players were feeding off of it. And a pretty good, you know, with the exception of that one kind of skied play back that Mensah tried to play to Vito that ended up going in for a corner late.
Yeah.
I think they showed pretty good chemistry there right in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's a great thing to see. That's a starting point that you want with two guys who haven't played in a league game together until the other day. And I thought the chemistry was obvious.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought they looked really strong. I think we're going to have to wait till next game to kind of see them against a full-strength team. Having that red card in the first 2 minutes was awesome, but it was also really bad if you're trying to judge players against an 11-man team, especially on defense when you're kind of losing an attacker and the team is kind of bunkering down and sending fewer people forward at the same time. I think later in the game, I got a little bit nervous. I thought that New York started getting more of the possession. They started putting more people forward because they needed a goal. And in the defense at times looked a little bit shaky, but I thought Vito and Jonathan were a good pairing. They seemed to be on the same page more often than not, which is important, especially early on. And they're both super physical, and that's going to really pay dividends against some of these teams with bigger forwards. So, but, you know, tentatively it looks really good. We'll have to wait to see how they play against a full-strength team, but all signs are looking
how did
good
we
so
like,
far.
How do we feel about Nagby after one game in that Will Trapp role?
We talked about this before the season. He's going to do those things that aren't going to show up on the stat line, but he's silky smooth on the ball, completed. I don't know if there's a stat like
that. I think
90,
he didn't 95. Miss a pass for the first 75 minutes.
Yeah, I was
94
say,
wow. Pass completion.
Yeah. Now, put that in perspective. Anybody, put that in perspective. How
Will Trapp
was can't
usually,
be a common thing to do.
No. I mean, Will Trapp is a very good passer. You know, and Will plays a lot of short passes. Nagby's not scared to knock a long ball or to try something. And that's when actually when he started his – I believe his first incomplete pass was he tried to thread one through a couple lines and it got picked off. You know, nothing dangerous. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, going 75 minutes in the center of the midfield when your team has the ball a lot, not incompleting a pass is – is really impressive.
Yeah.
Against New York City's midfield, too, which is really the strength of their team.
Yeah, four long balls, three accurate long balls, 75% on those.
That in six tackles, and I think Patrick Gouldan pointed out, that's probably a little bit of an outlier from him, from what
sure.
we should be expecting. But both he and Arthur, I think Arthur had a really strong game as well. He had that, you know, he took that shot and it went off the side of the net late, but I appreciated that a little bit from Arthur, just, you know, seeing an opportunity and from a guy who, you know, I've criticized him plenty of us for the fact that he's not, you know, and he's never really going to be an offensive force there in the midfield position, but to see an opportunity to step on the opponent's neck and to go for it, I appreciated that. And he's another guy who, you know, found himself with six tackles. I think he won a couple balls in the air, and he looks pretty rejuvenated there playing with Nagby too.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a big season for Arthur, because I think we've been talking about for a while. He's probably one of the biggest question marks, and if he doesn't take a step, he's a big candidate to potentially get replaced come summer with the signing.
Well, you know, and again, Nagby just silky smooth on the ball, that you feel comfortable and confident whether he drops back to receive the ball, or if he pushes up into the attack, or if he goes side to side. I mean, he's one of those guys that can collect the ball anywhere, dish it off, and become a playmaker in kind of a withdrawn role. And it's going to be great. And I think, Bart, you hit the nail on the head with him and Artur, man. They looked so good together. We didn't see that last year with very many of the holding mid pairings.
Pedro Santos seemed a bit anonymous to me.
Well, the second half, I thought he slowed down, but the first half, I mean, he was on it. It felt like he was going to score a goal.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the header that almost, and he ripped that shot that was going to, got to be 100 miles an hour that went over. But, I mean, he was, I would say the first 30 minutes of the game, he was certainly the most apparent on the screen. I was watching it at home, and he just jumped off the television because he was everywhere. And I thought he is owed a goal by the soccer gods.
Yeah.
I was surprised that he didn't score.
Interesting, though, that you watched it on TV. I watched it there. And it does give you a different perspective,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so you saw more than I saw, basically, which is
How
good.
How many beers did you have, though, Ryan?
Zero.
How many times did you
zero.
Go to the line to
zero.
Try and see Bart, but Bart
zero.
Wasn't.
I had a cup of coffee, and I had a Schmitz, and that's it.
Schmitz sounds like a beer.
Well, it is, but I had the sausage version. It's cooked in beer, though, maybe. I don't know.
He was hammered.
I wasn't a super big fan of Pedro. I thought that him and Mokhtar both were pretty disappointing. I thought that when Diaz came on, we looked like a much better team. I think, you know, all credit to Zalarian for creating what he did out of nothing, really. Mm-hmm. Because I thought, other than that, we really didn't have that many chances where I thought, oh, for sure this is going to be a goal. Even that header from Pedro was kind of the first real kind of shot on target where I thought, okay, this might go in. Everything else were kind of like these half chances, like that Pedro shot that went over.
I don't know if that was a half chance.
No.
He skied it, but I mean, it's a nice
he
shot.
Also had
well,
one
but it was a shot from outside the box. I mean, it was if you look at the expected goals for that, it's not going to be like super high. You shoot that 10 times and you know you're going to score it maybe twice or three times. So, I don't know.
I think Mokhtar in particular, and I thought Pedro was less aggressive. I kind of agree with Mike. It certainly wasn't his best game.
Yeah.
But he did win the crew you know, needed somebody to kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck. He did that with those shots. Mokhtar, remember, had that shot in the first half. Now, you'd like to see him put that in the side netting instead of right at Sean Johnson. But I thought Mokhtar did some good things off the ball. And if you go back and look at the goal, he makes a run that opens up space for, I think it's Nagby, to find Harrison Offal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, stuff like that that, you know, again, it wasn't his best game for either of them. But little things like that I thought Mokhtar did fine with.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, I thought Diaz was great in terms of running at a tired back line. You've got to finish that chance.
Yeah.
That's no, yeah. But I think that'll come. You saw last year. The kid can finish.
Well, and I think we're criticizing attacking players for not scoring more, and sure. we're complimenting midfielders for completing more passes, when I think both of those stats are really kind of skewed a little bit by the fact that they were 10 men for the yeah. entire game. So this is one of those games where, you know, I'm really happy with the 3 points. I have a really tough time, you know, judging players objectively based on the performance, because it was lopsided the whole time. But, you know, whenever you get 3 points at home, especially to a quality team like New York City, can't complain about that. I mean, that's always a good sign.
And we know the plan going forward is for Diaz to start and yeah. to play. And I think we all agree that this
is... We've talked about this, and I think this is why you weren't here, Brian. I think it's going to depend on who's on form. And I mean, I think that's true in a lot of positions. You could say that, obviously. But I think you saw Mokhtar at the end of preseason play really well. Now, Diaz was dealing with a hip injury, so that gave the opportunity. But I think, ideally, yes, you play Pedro on one side. He tucks into the pocket. Diaz stretches the back line. But I think there'll be games when you start Santos and Mokhtar again. Or maybe even games when you know you really want to push high and you start two burners, put Etienne on the opposite side with Diaz, and, you know, really run it back lines and stuff like that. So, you know, I think you'll see a lot of rotation with the wide midfielders throughout the season.
Yeah, I think winger rotation will probably be key for the Crew this season. But
they're going to have to.
Yeah, I mean, I like Santos in the first half, because in those first 20 minutes against 10 men, with a lot of passing around the box, they were pretty much just trying to pick out that perfect high cross or through ball to Jossie to try and just stick in a header. Whereas Santos is like, we need to get shots off, because I like when players get their shots off, even if it's low percentage. You can potentially get a corner out of it. You start to pepper the goalie a little bit more. Give them a little bit of pressure. When you're just passing it around the box a little bit there, especially against 10 men, you're not really helping yourself trying to find that pinpoint chance. Sometimes you just got to, you know, tell Sean Johnson, hey, we're just going to keep shooting at you until we score.
Well, that's the thing. There is no perfect shot ever. I mean, every soccer player, every team tries to find it at every level. But in the end, hey, just take your chances when you have them.
I would argue that Luis Diaz had the perfect
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, he shanked it. He shanked it for basically a throw-in almost.
Yeah. But
it's never good when your shot's
almost
a throw-in.
That was the perfect opportunity. I mean, when you're talking, and that was... That really showed that, you know, we were talking about the audacity that Zilarayan had to take that shot that he scores on, but I think you also saw the patience that he has and the vision to turn, you know, when he could have very well been greedy and tried to put it away and instead find the rookie and, you know, or I guess he's not a rookie, he's still a young guy though, Diaz. And you know, that hurt, but I was so happy. Diaz ended up with 3 shots and 2 on target. You know, he had the... tied with Santos for the most shots on target, and he only played, what, 25 minutes?
Mm-hmm. And he ran. That's the thing. He ran at him. When you run at that defense, when they're just trying to get their oxygen, they're trying to get their breaths in, that helps a lot. And you saw when Diaz ran at that defense, the Crew just had all this space to potentially get that second goal. It should have been 2 or 3.
You know, to pick up where you were talking about the rotation we might see with the win, I agree with you 100%. I think we go by committee this year, and that's not a bad thing at all. You know, like Murph said, go by who's in form. Last year, we didn't have that luxury. We were playing – really, Porter only had 10 guys that should have been on the field, but we have to play with 11, right? This year, we can be 14, 15 deep.
Don't you say Connor Maloney.
I would never. I
walk out.
He ticked me off from the beginning of the year. But as the season went on, he grew on me.
God bless Connor Maloney, wherever you are. Now, to kind of put a bow on this, I want to circle back to the red card. Because what we haven't really touched on, and you're always going to argue these kinds of breakaway plays. And as you say, I believe it was you, Alex, said by the letter of the law, that was a red card. First, let's break down the play, because it obviously turned the game, and it could have turned the game in an entirely different way by leading to a goal. I love plays like that. I love breakaways. And I was disappointed to see him get hauled down. I wanted to see how it was all going to turn out. But let's break down that play. And was that something that we, not that we'll ever know, but was that something we were looking to do before the shape of the game changed?
I have to think that they had considered something like that ahead of time. I mean, it was clear that Room knew that Lucas was going to make a run and decided to boot it long. And he's got the pace to do that. And I think, you know, he definitely got his heel clipped on the way through. And so, yeah, it's a denial of a goal-scoring opportunity by the letter of the law. That's a red card. He's got to go. Do I think he meant to clip him? No. But that's the way it works.
Well, obviously, maybe they weren't quite ready for that burst of speed.
And, no.
Now the word is out that he can run, and you'd better make sure that you're organized and know where he is, because that play is coming again.
Yeah.
You know, Room is very good at playing the ball out of the back, and I want to see it again. I was disappointed that he went down. Like I said, glad a guy got sent off, and then I kind of sat down and I went, I kind of wanted to see a really good match, an end-to-end match. We didn't see that.
I'll take the red card in the second minute all day long. Because you get 88 minutes where it's just, you know, 10 against 11.
It's hard to complain about, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, especially early in the season. Yeah. I kind of want to see what we can do even up against a really
It's just
good
not
team.
An aesthetically pleasing game like that.
And these teams have had a history of having really good back-and-forth goal-scoring games.
But I think it is also indicative, you know, this was a team that struck fast right off the kickoff a couple times in the preseason. We all know about, you know, Caleb Porter back in that game in 2015. This is sort of his MO in these kind of, you know, the set plays and looking to strike early, maybe while a team, especially in the first game of the season, is still getting their legs under them. And, you know, the result, it wasn't the goal that they were looking for, but it certainly gave them the edge, I think, in the game that was the difference.
All right, let's go around the room real quick before we wrap up our look back at the victory on Sunday. Just give me your best guy and your worst guy, maybe a couple of words if you want about either. We'll start with you, Patrick.
I think it would be hard to say that Zellerayan was not the best player. I mean, he was involved in a number of their attacks, was, you know, obviously scored the goal, creates the red card, as we were just talking about. Close second, I'd say, was Nagby, just the way he controlled the midfield. And then worst player, I guess Giassi's are dead. Like, and I say that, and I don't think Giassi, I mean, I know I saw some stuff on Twitter, and I know he didn't have a great game, but I didn't think he was terrible, but, you know, I think when
he's
you have
he's going to be judged harshly because of the nature of the position.
Correct, yeah. And as you should, and, you know, they're going to be an attacking team, and he's at the focal point of that. I, again, think he did a lot of good things setting up their counter press, setting up their defense, but, you know, he didn't stand out to me, whereas, you know, Pedro had his opportunities, Harrison Offal had his, you know, I can go through everybody else and be like, hey, they did this, and this, whereas Zardes, I don't think you can really point to that one thing that's like, this is what he did to help the team that day as much.
For me, I'm going to bring up Milton. I thought he was terrific. I mean, defensively.
Great to see him out there.
Yeah, I mean, defensively just locked down. Offensively getting involved. Showing pace, and that's coming off a major knee injury just a year ago. I thought he was terrific, both sides of the ball. I'm really looking forward to see as he continues to, you know, get the strength in that knee and kind of get everything about him. I think he's going to be a huge playmaker or a player for us. Worse. For lack of a better term, worse, right? I would say
maybe that's not the right word.
Underwhelming.
Yeah,
underwhelming. I like that.
Yeah, I would say Mokhtar, and we talked about him already, but he was just a little more invisible than I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, Alex,
Lucas was the best. I think it's he's one of the best players I've ever seen in a black and gold shirt. That first impression, he's just incredibly technical. I think that actually, he was less able to show his ability given the fact that New York was down a man and they packed the box. But he created on a number of occasions something out of nothing where he would just spin a defender, get by him, run at another defender, get by that guy, and then keep going. That happened like 3 or 4 times.
His teammates also need to get used to having this kind of weapon as a teammate,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
And to learn how
Caleb said after the game – you know, he was very complimentary of him. He said he needs to get the ball more. We need to get him the ball more.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he didn't touch the ball enough.
If he's one-on-one against a defender in an 11-v-11 game, you know, half of the time he's going to burn that guy and be beyond the keeper. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he was the real standout man for me. I thought the weakest guy was Mukhtar. I thought, you know, he seemed lethargic. His crossing was not that good, and especially in a match where you're talking that, you know, they've got so many guys in the box. You need to be playing inaccurate crosses if that's the way you're trying to score goals. We sent so many balls into Zardes, and Zardes did not have a good game, but Zardes also got no service. I mean, there was not a single good cross that was delivered to Zardes the entire game. And I was really hard on Zardes last time for missing sitters. There was not a single half chance that he should have finished. There was nothing. There was no service. So Mukhtar is my weakest guy, but, you know, Lucas is the real deal. That guy is good, and I am really, really happy to have him.
I mean, for me, it's Lucas, you know, top, and don't even need to go into it because everyone's covered it. I would say maybe not, you know, disappointing performance, but a bit concerning was actually Jonathan Mensah. You know, obviously they get the clean sheet, but you're playing up a man for, you know, 88 minutes. And there are a couple, you know, with defense, it's tough, especially in that position, because it's, you know, any mistake you make can potentially be, you know, you're pulling it out from the back of your net, and between the ball that he plays out late and then getting megged by Castellanos on the last really good opportunity that New York had, and of course the guy that scored that late goal for NYCFC last year in Mapfre Stadium, just a couple little concerning plays. I think overall puts in a very strong performance, but those two question marks there for late when you're trying to close out a team, it's a little bit worrisome.
So I did the game grades, which you can read, by the way, masterreport.com. Shameless plug.
All right. See somebody else doing what I do. I love it. Tout it.
I tied Nagby and Lucas for a rating. I thought, obviously, we've said so many times, Elrayon is a phenomenal midfielder. He's a phenomenal creator out there. And the other attackers are going to have to get used to it. He can create something out of nothing. You got to be on high alert constantly. Nagby as well, his passing was phenomenal. He might not have gotten the assist or the goal, but he got the hockey assist. That pass leads to Afful, leads to Zelrayan. You always have to look back at what play started the build-up to get that goal. Underwhelming, I agree with most everybody else, Mukhtar, for sure. I thought he could have got a little more involved. That chance he had, anybody else could be standing there, would have been a chance as well. He was in the right place at the right time, but wasn't able to finish it. So, like to see more from him. But I also really wanted to shout out the subs that came on. I thought the subs that came on had a good impact. Diaz, I liked Adi on the ball.
He's huge.
Yeah, he's big.
I had no idea how big he was.
And he was so calm in possession. And late in game, he was the one going to the corner trying to box out those guys.
Scored two goals today in the scrimmage against the Riverhounds.
Big 3-0 win against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. I think Barry got the other goal. And then Cadden also, I liked him too. Good versatility.
Fair enough. Well, thank you, fellas. New Jersey sponsor announced since the last podcast and during the crew week. I'm a huge fan of Nationwide Children's. My youngest daughter was there for several days when she was an infant. They are a world-class institution, and it's a source of pride for me to see them on the jersey. I don't know how much else to say, really, but I'm a fan of what they do, and I think it's a great partnership. And hopefully it will lead to the players interfacing with the kids at the hospital more. Mm-hmm. And
sure,
obviously
we
want to encourage kids to get out and be active. I mean, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. Nothing against Barbasol. I use Barbasol to this day when I do shave. Thank you, Ori, for wearing the Barbasol jersey. But it is a wonderful partnership, and I hope that it goes for multiple years. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, what is it, five years?
7 years.
Is that the second longest sponsorship deal? Because wasn't the Herbalife one, the 10-year one that LA Galaxy did, was the longest?
That could be. I'm unsure on that, but it's 7 years.
And Herbalife is a Ponzi
scheme. Yeah, exactly.
So we have the jewel of the community, Nationwide mm-hmm. Children's Hospital, on the jersey. It's something that everybody in Central Ohio should be proud of, the great work that they do there. It's a beautiful thing.
So just to clarify what you just said, we have Nationwide Children's Hospital just for this year.
Yep.
Next year, we just have Nationwide, the insurance company.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Well, so, first of all, I think that the Nationwide Children's Hospital looks so good on these jerseys. And
I love the jerseys.
The Nationwide logo will be great, and you know that looks fine. It looks like every other soccer jersey.
Will they put Peyton Manning's face?
His face is on the butterfly.
Yeah. The guy?
Oh, God, yeah.
Brad Paisley, is that the other guy?
Yeah.
That's the other one. But I think that this deal really gives some legitimacy to this team. And again, no offense to Barbasol, no offense to
how about Snickers? Acura. I love Snickers, too.
That was a good one.
Acura.
Acura.
And yeah, Acura was a big one at the time. You know, that was a well-recognized brand. But to have Nationwide Insurance, Nationwide the company, on the front of your jersey. And yes, they're a local company, which helps get them. But and obviously the Crew have worked with them to get the land for the downtown stadium, so there's a relationship there. But Steve Lyons was a big part of this. You know, maybe the first... The Ohio Health thing was big, but this is the first huge thing that he's done, kind of throwing his weight around. Mm. Aside from that tweet he had to the writer about the Austin thing the other
which
night.
Is arguably better than the sponsorship.
Yeah,
as if the sponsorship.
Does Austin have a jersey sponsor?
They
now?
Do. It's Yeti.
Mm. Yeti. Oh, well, that's right. I knew that.
So that's the whole thing was
place
this,
to keep
this
your
guy.
Case
I forget who he writes for. But he writes
the guy with the glasses on Twitter.
Yeah, he's a troll. He said something about that. Anthony Precourt tried to move the team from Columbus. Now Anthony Precourt already has a sponsorship for the jerseys, and he's a year away from playing, and the Crew are going to enter a season without one. And Steve Lyons, a few nights ago, responded with, do you want to – it wasn't retract that, but something along – you want to
– update your tweet or whatever. Yeah,
exactly.
And that was well done by him. But, yeah, I think that this very much legitimizes the Crew, legitimizes this new ownership group, the people they've hired to work out this deal. We mentioned those Nationwide, not to use the name, but those Nationwide commercials feature Peyton Manning and Brad Paisley. If you're not a country music fan, I don't think you know who Brad Paisley is, but I'm pretty sure most people know who Peyton Manning is. That's some serious credibility there for a company like that. So I thought that was a home run. I think the way they're doing it with the Nationwide the first year, Nationwide Children's Hospital the first year, makes a lot of sense given the Mafre sponsorship is still intact for another year, so this is a nice way to still have a jersey sponsor and work into what'll be a great sponsor going into the new stadium right down the street from Nationwide Arena.
It's one of those feel good stories that I think you really just like to see. I mean, I'm a fan of Nationwide Children's Hospital. I think it's a great cause. I'm in general just a fan of sports teams not going the Herbalife route and taking whatever shady company will pay the most money. Like, I'm sure that we could have found some, out of town, Ponzi scheme shirt sponsor who would have paid more money.
People forget NYCFC's Bernie Madoff jersey sponsorship. That's gone down the memory hole.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff like that in professional sports in general. I mean, gambling companies and stuff like that.
Well, that's mostly the EPL team.
Advocare, Life Vantage. Those are just two other multi-level marketing organizations that are sponsors
Sony.
For other MLS teams.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I hope that they will wear the Children's Hospital shirts in future years on occasion. I know that's not going to be the primary. But I do think it would be cool if they kept some sort of a relationship with the hospital going long term. I think it's good for
auction
the brand.
Auction off the jerseys, give the money to the hospital.
It'd be awesome.
Do it, like have the Children's Hospital game at least once a year.
Absolutely.
And
love it.
Game worn jerseys, people will pony up for those. It'd be a good fundraiser.
And you can bring some kids love from the hospital, do like an Iowa thing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we figured that out for them.
Where's our check, Columbus Crew?
before we take a break, I want to swing around the league real quick because it was a full slate of games and it was just made official, I saw on Twitter this afternoon, that Federico Higuain is now a member of the DC United.
We should probably take a break.
Want to take a break now?
Listen, I'm going to rant.
We can do that. I can refill my beverage, and then we'll talk about Pipa. And by the way, I mean, you can't blame the guy. He wants to work.
Nope. That's right.
We'll discuss what his role might be at this stage of his career with DC United, and we'll do that after we run to the bar here at the Point Tavern on the Massive Report Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Massive Report Podcast at the Point Tavern. right along Riverside Drive. Before the break, I was talked out of bringing up Pipa going to DC United. It is a tough pill to swallow. We've known this was coming for several days, but I saw on Twitter now DC United's official Twitter feed making it official that Pipa will be a member of. Here, I'm starting to get my cough again, guys. Pipa's going to DC United, and obviously, the man wants to work. We can't cast aspersions on him going and plying his trade where he's going to ply it. I just wonder how much is left and what his role will be with DC United. Does anybody have any inside dope on that? I know Alex just wants to rant about it.
Oh, my God. I'm so pissed.
Who are you angry at?
Everybody in Columbus who let this gem of a human being in a crew legend walk when he accepted $100,000 in DC.
Wow.
That's one third of what we paid David Guzman last season. You're telling me that he can't produce one third of what David Guzman, who was terrible, produced for us? And he's a coach. He's helping mentor their younger players, which I think, hey, somebody like that might be nice instead of bullying them out of Columbus in the offseason. That would be pretty swell if we had like a nice guy.
That is stunning mentor. At the price being low. Is that confirmed?
$100,000 confirmed.
Wow.
So he went from $1.1 million to $0.1
million. Wow.
And we let him walk. $100,000.
Do we expect him to play a whole lot?
I don't. Just if he plays two games.
When you're done.
Yeah. I will. I will let you know when I'm done. So that's like Eddie Opoku plus $20,000 is what we're talking about. That's less than what Joe Bendick got paid for half a season in Columbus.
I barely remember that.
Yeah,
Joe Bendick.
Yeah,
days.
That's literally
so does Joe Bendick.
That's literally
or was it out. Day?
That's literally what we paid John Kempen last season.
Wow.
I mean, if you're telling me that Federico Higuain as player coach is not worth what we paid John Kempen, I'm going to disagree with you because John Kempen, is it okay that we say that he sucks? He's not that good, right?
He almost shut out Minnesota.
Yeah. I think it would have been a good thing to let Pipa have one more season as his player coach and then bring him on to Porter's staff. I think that would have bought Porter a lot of goodwill. I think it would have kept someone around Columbus who everybody wants to see. This guy is a future Circle of Honor guy, not even debatable.
Actually, current rules will forbid him from being in the Circle of Honor because he didn't win anything.
Okay, they can change those rules in about 2 seconds, yeah. And if they don't, that's BS. But, you know, he's a club legend, and he's now playing for our rival who offered him less than 10% of what he was earning before, and we couldn't have beat that offer. We could have offered him $110,000, literally 10% of his prior contract, and it would have been more than what DC United offered him. I am so mad. So mad. You guys can tell me why.
Let Mark continue this time.
You guys can please tell me how he would be overpaid at $110,000. By all means, please go ahead.
I don't think he would be. I think the only interesting, and this is, you know, I don't know, and maybe you guys that cover the team have a better idea. You know, was it a case that when they parted ways, that Federico was pushing, believed that he should be in a starting position, starting in that 10, and then maybe while on the market a little bit, decided to kind of, you know, push back and say maybe I'll be all right coming off the bench and, you know, getting in that transitional role. I think that Federico Higuain as a backup for Lucas Zelarayán and as a guy that, again, these young players that can learn from, I think it's a no-brainer. He's at the fans' level. I think the only question is if he would have been amenable to taking that role in Columbus at the time when they did part ways. And if he was, then I think that's shame on Tim Bezbachenko and Caleb Porter for not keeping this guy here because it's pennies, it's shekels that he's getting paid for, and that's somebody that you had a chance to do this, you know, to be different from the way that they. I think Michael Arias's column last week was a pretty good one, just talking about the way that, you know, this team in 2010 and 2011, when they got rid of a lot of those guys very unceremoniously from that MLS Cup winning team, this was a chance to do it right, to part right. It's still better than what they did with, you know, Guillermo, but the fact that he still had something in the tank, I would have liked to see it here in Columbus.
To answer your question, Bart, I don't know what Pipa's thoughts were about coming back from the injury and, you know, what role he could fulfill. But I think in addition to your question, I think another question to be asked is, would he have taken the same amount here?
Exactly.
Did sitting on the free agent market all off season, you know, make him be like, okay, I've got, you know, I just want to play. And
yeah, he wasn't signed 2 months ago.
Right.
He was
so
today.
You know, maybe, you know, and I don't know how much there were talks between him and Columbus, but I think those things are questions to be asked that we don't know about. I think that I understand where you're coming from, both of you. It's similar to our conversation with Will Trapp, where, you know, he's a guy who gave a lot to this team, and, you know, I understand why you view it as he should be treated better. I also think that there's a business side to this. I think there's a new ownership side to this, a new coaching staff side to this. This is a 30-plus-year-old guy coming off a second major injury in the last few years. You know, this medical staff worked with him all last year. I think they probably have a pretty good idea of what he's going to be able to do coming back. I also think that they were ready to move on. You know, you can talk about the coaching staff. This coaching staff is assembled, and, you know, Caleb has brought his guys here that he's worked with. You know, the only change this offseason in terms of a coach was a goalkeeper coach. So I don't know where Pipa fits in that. You know, you have something you think is working right, and we'll find out if it does. And I think that, you know, you brought in a guy like Lucas Zellerin to be the number 10. There's not many situations in MLS, at least, I can't think of a ton in soccer, where you have a guy like Pipa who's been so good in that role, and clearly that was his role, and then he sits and is the backup and kind of has a shadow hanging over this new guy who you just spent record money on. It would be a weird situation, I think, in the locker room, only because Pipa was so loved in the locker room. You know, what, you know, if these two guys, this is just me spitballing here, but what if they don't get along? And then you have these guys that, you know, were here with Pipa, and now you see what Zellerine's doing on the field. You know, there's a lot of reasons to think about why you move on from Pipa. And I also think that as much as, you know, you guys want this to be like everything feel good, and I know you want this to be like the crew have been in the past with, you know, we appreciate these guys, and I think they do appreciate these guys. And Bezbachenko said after the season that there's a role for Pipa here if he ever wants it, but he did not mention a coaching role. I think that this club is trying to build a winning culture, and historically that hasn't been the case here. And, you know, sometimes that means you have to part ways with guys. You know, you look at the New York Red Bulls and what they've done throughout the last several years, and they've continued to win. You know, they moved on from Sasha Kljestan. They moved on from Dax McCarty. They just moved on from Luis Robles. These are guys who I think you lump into the same category as Higuain.
Oh, I don't know about that.
What are you talking about? In New York, I mean, Dax was the guy there. I mean, the team rallied around a guy like that. Even Petke, when he was there, and they got rid of him as coach, and he was a club legend in New York. So, I mean, it's just what teams have to do to win.
It's professional sports.
Yeah,
you know?
it's not puppies and rainbows.
Believe me, I've had to talk my daughters down from the ledge after Will Trapp was traded. Did anyone see him play with? I only saw a few minutes of that game. Will Trapp with Miami. I saw him zip by the screen a couple of times.
He was more or less invisible, and then around, I don't know, 75th minute, he hit a really beautiful long ball, and that was about all he did.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and going back to Pipa real quick, and I said this to you, Alex, earlier. You know, right now they're not paying for a backup attacking mid, and I actually asked Caleb about this in the preseason. You know, do you guys feel like you need to go get somebody, or is Pedro, you know, playing both roles as a winger and the reserve attacking mid good enough? And he said that they're going to stick with Pedro. They like what he brings there, and that it's hard to find another number 10 that, you know, can be your starter if you need him to be your starter. You know, I mean, look at what happened these past couple of years with Sosa, you know. No one was convinced that Sosa could step in if Higuain got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't last year. you know, could Pipa do that? I don't know. I'm led to believe that they did their homework on this. You know?
I don't know if it was a fitness thing or whether it was a, this is a guy who obviously has a lot of pull in this locker room and maybe had a different philosophy than Caleb Porter. And I think that was probably a, in my eyes, probably a bigger factor than, it was a culture change rather than a...
It's a tactical change because what Zellerayan brings and what Porter wants from that role, because we saw it in Portland with Valeri, is not what Higuain can do anymore. Maybe 7 years ago, but not today.
He tried to sign Valeri.
Hold on a second. But we're not talking about a 35-year-old coming off an ACL injury.
You're still talking about a 35-year-old.
No, I think it might be a year or two. But the point is that ACL injury for a guy who's in his mid-30s, that's a big thing for a soccer player. The thing was, he wants a guy who can push the attack.
Yes.
And what Zellerayan certainly showed in that first game was that he can do that. I don't think Higuain could do that. I don't even know if he could in a reserve role the way they want to play.
Well, and we'll see what he does for DC. But, you know, I think Valeri is a really good example of how a guy who maybe isn't the quickest anymore but still has good passing ability can do very, very well in a Porter system. Valeri is no spring chicken. He's never been a pacey player. He is a slow guy who is an incredible passer and has incredible technical ability with both feet. He's very, very similar to people, which I think is why Porter sniffed around when he was, you know, looking like he might leave Portland.
Is that actually true, though? Because I've heard multiple things that he didn't actually look to try and get Valeri.
I think the big difference between Valeri and Higuain is Valeri plays as that second forward almost, and Higuain's never, you know, he's dropped into the midfield. And we actually
I think he was trained to drop into that role as a tactical thing. I think he easily, I mean, if you make him run less by letting him hang out, you know, as almost like a number 11, I think he would love that. I think that he almost had to drop back in Berhalter's system to help cover for the midfield. But I think if you let him stay forward, he would. I don't know. At 100,000, even if this news comes out a week ago, if I'm Bezbachenko, I'm calling up people and saying, "Hey, man, I know that we couldn't negotiate anything. I'm here in 100,000. If you want to come back, I'll offer you, you know, 180." I would be pushing 200K on him, and I'm not even going to blink about it. He was on 1.1 million. He's never going to re-sign for 1.1 million. That would be crazy. But to not sign him for around 100, that's also crazy.
Well, I'll just tell you this. As the oldest fart at this table, I will tell you that time always wins.
Yes,
okay?
It does.
Sure. It always wins. And that's just the sad reality of it. I wish him nothing but the best.
Likewise.
It's a done deal. Joseph Martinez of Atlanta goes down with a season-ending knee injury, which I think changes the entire shape of the Eastern Conference with one guy going down.
Changes the shape of the entire league, not just the East, because Atlanta just lost their prize piece for a whole season, and this is a MLS Cup contender. So they need to find goals. I think they have those sources. You saw Barco score against Nashville. And also, I thought Nashville, for their first ever MLS game, had some cool moments. Nissan Stadium was packed. Actually went on a tour there a couple weeks ago, and they were really excited about it.
The TIFO that they had of Johnny Cash that iconic middle finger photo, and it said Nash instead of Cash.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That is my all-time favorite TIFO. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that was awesome.
Brilliant.
The yellow jerseys, Star Wars one this
week. Yeah, the yellow jerseys didn't sit well with me.
No, Brian, it doesn't feel right.
Brian, did you see the Star Wars TIFO at Moffray this week?
I did. I loved it. I'm just saying, I'm a huge fan of Johnny Cash, and that's pretty much my all-time favorite photo.
Shout out to anyone who
musician.
Might know the people who are behind that.
Oh, it's great. I'm not taking anything away. I just... The Johnny Cash TIFO was too much.
It was fantastic. But when you look back to Joseph Martinez's injury, it's a shame because he's one of the best players in the MLS. We're not going to be able to see him play in the 25th season of the MLS, and I think it does open a door for the Crew to climb up in those standings and become even more of a contender if Atlanta starts to drop off a little bit. I think.
Well, Adam John came on as a sub for him. They obviously need to find somebody who's out there.
Well, it's funny you mention that. One of the guys that was sent with him Daniel Sturridge. They, you know, people quickly associated, hey, he just got released from his club or negotiated a release. Then today it comes out that he's suspended for over a year. Is that what you said?
Until mid-June.
Yeah, so for gambling or being involved with gambling, I'm not really sure.
Yikes!
Yeah, not great. So, yeah, I was listening today on the SiriusXM United States of Soccer radio show, and they talked to Sam Stachel of The Athletic about this for a while. And, you know, he said he believes that they'll be able to sign a TAM-level player or something because, you know, Adam John, fantastic dude. Wish him nothing but the best, and if he could be Atlanta's forward, that would be great, but I just don't see that. You know, he's a backup forward in MLS. So they're going to have to do something. And, I mean, you know, Joseph Martinez, in just a few years, has quickly placed himself in conversation as one of the best forwards to ever play in this league.
Easily.
Just, you know, in what he's able to do, you know, as much as you may hate him as an opponent, you know, if he was the forward for your team, the celebrations he has and just the way he plays the game, you've got to love that guy if he's on your team, and you know, you hate him if he's not, and he usually scores against you if you're not. So, yeah, I agree with Ori. It's going to change things in this league. Atlanta still has plenty of attacking options.
For sure.
Know? They're still going to be in contention for a playoff spot, and depending on how they rebound from this, they'll, you know, have a chance to still make a run. But, you know, I think if you looked at the league, at least the Eastern Conference, New York City was a team most people thought of as one of those elite teams. Atlanta, maybe Toronto after the run they made last year and whatnot, though I think there's some question marks there. And then there's, you know, the Crew in New England, and, you know, can Philadelphia make another run again? You know, teams like that. And, you know, I think it does open things up for the Crew to maybe, you know, maybe now you can make a push instead of finishing fourth, fifth in the East. You look at that second, third, you know, depending on how other things shape up.
Yeah. Well, it's a long season, and certainly some stunning news out of Atlanta's opener in Nashville the other night. Another eyebrow raiser for me was Minnesota going out to Portland and winning 3-1.
Oh my gosh, Portland looked awful. They looked like they were very disjointed in all facets of the game.
Do they know how they want to play?
It doesn't look like it. It really doesn't.
It didn't even look like it a lot last year. Like, I know they made the playoffs. I think they hosted a playoff game last year. But when I watch them play, like, I don't think they've ever found how the guys that are still there from Porter fit with Savarese and how, yeah, disjointed is a really good word.
They just need to sell Valeri for $100K and then they'll be better.
Well, the Crew didn't get $100K for him.
That's right. It's even worse. It's even worse, Pat. God.
But yeah,
they could buy Zellerion, though, and that might make it better.
Well, you know, and also for Minnesota, Kevin Molino is a guy on a mission. I mean, he's been talked about off season about, hey, he's going to be replaced if he doesn't step up his game. And he showed in the first game, hey, I scored 2 goals. You're not going to be replacing me anytime soon.
And 2 assists for Ethan Finlay, who got into MLS Team of the Week.
Good for Ethan.
I love Ethan.
Our opponent on Saturday, we go out to Seattle to play the defending champion Sounders. Chicago was their first opponent, and Jordan Morris comes off the bench, scores twice, leads them to a come-from-behind 2-1 win over the Chicago Fire. I saw something the other day, and I didn't have time to really get into it, but Morris has been butting heads with his manager, so there's a little bit of consternation out there, perhaps. Why wasn't he in the starting 11? Do we know that?
He wasn't in the starting 11 because they just played a game that went to penalty kicks on Thursday night. But he wasn't happy about it. That was, I mean, Brian Schmetzer said after the game he wasn't happy about it, and it showed on the field because he came in and scored 2 goals because he was angry. I didn't see this game. I watched some of the highlights. I did watch both of their CONCACAF Champions League games. And I don't know. Now, Seattle is notorious for these last few years, since the last year of Ziggy Schmidt, of starting slow and then figuring things out. They usually add somebody in the summer, and then they make that run. At least in those two Champions League games, I mean, this is a good team, don't get me wrong, but this isn't an unbeatable team. I think, you know, I'll be interested to see what their lineup looks like. I imagine they'll be first choice, you know, after a week, but Chicago's a bad team. I mean,
yeah.
Chicago may be the worst team in MLS this year. And
their logo's bad too.
Well, that is for sure.
What did we decide that looked like? like a convenience store logo or something?
I made it on PowerPoint.
That's like what
with PowerPoint. Yeah. And it is a or like, dead
that's
ringer.
How I cover of it.
That's how I would draw
with PowerPoint shapes.
That's how I would draw fire if I was 4 years old. Yeah. With those colors,
or like,
too.
Or like on your phone.
Yeah,
you can make that on your phone. It's terrible.
Yeah, I hate it.
I just, I mean, somebody got paid six figures for that. We are all in the wrong business.
But now they're playing at Soldier Field, so no
and
more.
Did
more
I see
bridge.
That they like that ownership and actually came back and said, "Hey, fans, we heard you because of the blowback, and they're going to do a rebrand of the rebrand."
That was the report. Was that they're considering rebranding again? We'll see what happens.
Well, it still amazes me, you know, having lived in Seattle and having grown up in the Northwest and being, as I mentioned, old enough to remember the North American Soccer League and going to the King Dome and seeing Brian Smetzer, their coach, playing for the Seattle Sounders in the North American Soccer League. And it's kind of a neat story. He was, as I understand it anyway, was just kind of a placeholder. And he's obviously gone on to great success. I don't think they ever envisioned that he was going to be their manager of the future. He's certainly a fixture in Northwest soccer.
Probably the most underrated coach in MLS.
What does he do well that you like?
I don't know. He wins.
I mean, fair enough.
I asked, shortly after the MLS Cup, I asked Caleb Porter about him, and he was like, yeah, I don't know why he's not in conversations among the great coach. You know, he was like, he was always a great dude. He was always like, talking to him about soccer was always really interesting, and clearly he's gone on to have success. And I do think a lot of people thought that year that they just made a run after they fired Ziggy, you know, it was just a rah-rah around the new guy type of thing, but clearly that's not the case. They've continued to be very good.
He's pretty low-key.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not bombastic.
Right.
He's and he doesn't go around, you know, like, say, Bruce Arena or Ziggy have just a big, strong presence about him. But tactically, he knows what he's doing. And, yeah, you could say, well, they have a ton of money and they're always bringing in new players. Sure, but we've seen that fail in all facets of sports.
But they're not bringing in players like, the Galaxy. Right. You know, I mean, they're making smart buys. They're spending money. But, clearly, it's worked, and it's not like you hadn't heard a lot of these guys before. So
the Crew win on Saturday if
they score more goals than the other team.
Well, that's well said.
What are you, John Madden?
I thought Bart was going to jump on that one, but he didn't.
If we can see guys besides Zelrayan pick up the slack offensively, and
it's a hard place to play.
Right,
very loud.
It is loud. It's fast because of that turf. There's always this weird kind of, I don't know if it's like a menace about the place. There's like, people go in there, teams go in there, and they're already ready to lose.
Well, I remember that match in Seattle a few years back. It wasn't that long ago, where we had two shots on goal, and we netted both of them and beat them.
The Crew have actually done decently well there. I mean, I don't know what other teams' record are there, but I would imagine the Crew are one of the better winning percentage, because obviously they don't play there every year. Or at least have played well, gotten results or been close. Yeah, there was that the game the first year Greg Berhalter was the coach with when Justin Merrim came off the bench and scored that first of many meat hooks that kind of started his path. Ethan Finley, no, that was in Portland, never mind. But Justin Merrim came in and did that. They got a win there. I think that was also week two of the season. But yeah, it's not an easy place to play by any stretch of the imagination. Those fans are nuts. They've got a ton of them, and the field turf doesn't help things.
Yeah, I'm looking at the previous head-to-heads in Seattle. I just pulled it up here. 2018, 0-0. 2016, the Crew lost 1-0. 2014, a 2-1 win for the Crew. 2-0 win for the Crew in 2012. And a 6-2 loss in 2011.
Is it 2012, the game I was thinking of then?
Where 2012, 2-0 win, Merrim and Renteria scoring.
Two shots
game.
On goal, two goals.
I think that
it
is
was,
that one.
It was stealing. I can't believe it was that long ago.
They also went out there and had a pretty good game in the U.S. Open Cup final could have turned the other way if certain things had happened.
Well, it's always a fun road trip. I'd like to make it myself sometime. How do we see it? Give me scores.
I'm gonna go 1-1.
1-1. All right, Alex.
I'm gonna say 1-0 Crew. I just hope there are no injuries. This whole thing with Atlanta's got me like freaked out again about the pitches in general in this league are abysmal. And
yeah, but that was Nashville.
Seeing, Yeah, I know, but Nashville is, you know, and yet another not so good pitch to add to the list. I think as we start getting these players that we're bringing in who are meant to be resold, the league is going to have to take a look at what kind of surfaces they have us playing on week in, week out. Because these guys, especially these young guys, you have one bad injury like the one that Atlanta just dealt with, and you know the transfer value of that player is going to plummet. So yeah, it's a big problem.
Well,
we're talking tens of millions of dollars.
Definitely makes you appreciate our service.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. Like a pool table.
That's right.
Bart?
I'm going to go with Kerwin this one.
Wait, what?
Yep.
Historic.
I'm going to go with 2-1. I think Zorayan is, you know, continues. I think he adds another one, continuing to create a lot of chances. I think Jossie Zardes gets his first of the year.
All right.
I think the weather is going to make an impact. I'm looking at the forecast in Seattle on Saturday. It's a 40% chance of rain.
So it's going to be just like it's been in Columbus recently.
It's pretty much every day that I live in Seattle.
Right.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
If the rain comes down, I don't expect goals. I think the Crew put in a good performance, but I do think Seattle's just going to take it. Maybe 2-1, 3-1 Seattle.
All right. I see Lucas scoring once, assisting twice.
Damn.
Zardes. And Vunga scores on a header on a corner kick.
Whoa.
Crew 3-2.
I like it, Brian. I like it.
Beautiful.
Nice.
See? Got it all mapped out.
I'm gonna go with Ori. I think it'll be a good performance, but you know, you just listed the results there, and there's a few close games where, you know, I think back to those games, it's like the Crew played decently well in that, but you know, for one reason or another, Seattle won that game. So I think probably 2-1 Seattle. But in a game where we come back next week and we're like, hey, that's the defending MLS Cup champs. They were back to full strength. And, you know, we saw some positive things out of this game that have us thinking positively going forward.
And unless the same thing happens on Sunday, this will be the first Crew game where it's 11-11. Unless Room decides to pick one out again and get somebody else sent off 30 seconds in.
What time's that game kick off on Saturday?
10 p.m.
Yeah. Oh.
So it's going to be a late night.
All right.
It's caffeine.
I like it.
That's an early night for me on Saturday.
You're a party animal, right, Murphy?
Yeah. The fridge stocked.
What else am I
ready
do?
To go? All right.
Be half married.
Well, we got our scores in. We looked back at NYCFC. The new season is underway, and that's always a beautiful thing. It's a long, windy road to October, and we're here every week to help break it down for you, the Massive Report. Ori, it's nice to meet you. Patrick, Alex, Mike, Bart, of course, Sam, keeping everything going.
Brian, we're glad you're healthy, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's good to be back. It's been a struggle. I almost lost my voice last Monday. I thought I was feeling better, and then Monday morning, it was just, I don't know what. Let's not talk about viruses, okay? That's an unpleasant topic.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Bart did a great job.
He did.
Thank
in
you, Bart.
Place.
Yeah, I do what I can. Yeah.
That's never an insult to Bart. It's just good to have the crew here.
Well, it's good to see you guys. Get me out of the house. You know, my wife always sort of raises an eyebrow, and I go, got to do the podcast. Bye! What? Why are you doing this? Because I love hanging out with you guys and talking Crew soccer, and we invite you to take in all the great coverage at MassiveReport.com. It's and the photography, of course, is top-notch as well. Sam and the fellas. Are we going to have more panelists next week? That's what I would like to know. Can we have more?
No, I don't think we physically can.
Let's have Sam get even more.
Oh, yeah.
Panelists. How about that? All right. Ralph isn't here. Where's Ralph?
Mm-hmm. He's at home being upset that he thinks his photo got ripped off by somebody.
Ralph, wherever you are, crack a white claw. And it's going to be okay. We'll see you next week back here at the Point Tavern for another edition of the Massive Report Podcast. We thank you so much for listening.